Welcome back. It's been a while. The holidays have come. We are in them. And that doesn't mean we should put out any fewer podcasts, but that's actually what it has meant so far. But we're going to do two this week. I promise you this. Two podcasts this week. We have this one, which is the normally scheduled regular podcast that we do. And then in a couple of days, I think Friday is when we'll put it out. We're going to do a mailbag episode. So if you listen to this podcast and you have a question to ask, say, you know, how do you guys record, or what do you think of my favorite fighter, or you guys don't talk about Tyson Fury enough, so talk about Tyson Fury. You can do that. Put that in the, so we have a Google document where you can put in questions. You can do all, whatever you want, really. We'll answer those questions. Maybe if they're about my mom. I don't know. Gleb continues to put questions about my mom. Oh my God.
Didn't duck the mom questions last time.
Did you look at the document?
I haven't yet.
Oh my God. So people are adding pictures to the document. So just a fair warning. If you go to this the document, don't go past page one. Just add in your question at the top.
I'll sort it out later.
Yeah, we'll... Jesus Christ. So, I mean, if you know what we do with our pictures, like, we've got Cyborg Roy now. Okay.
He's taken on an...
He's evolved. He's gonna he's gonna join the Justice League next. And also, Leo's like on a train or something, so that'll explain. That's also one of the problems I think I mentioned last time. We're having trouble with availability. And so Leo will step in, but he'll step in while he's on a train or, I don't know, coming back from wherever. So that's what's happening this week. Follow us on Twitter, on Instagram. You can talk to us there. You can send messages. And let's get right into this because we had some fights this weekend. And I've been thinking about this. Like, how do we start this? Like, do I say that, well, in the past, I have not been as complimentary of Sergey Kovalev as maybe others? Like, and I remember I did not think he would beat Bernard Hopkins. I thought he had the perfect style to beat or to lose to Hopkins. But now, after this weekend, and let's preface this all. Let's preface this. Everything we say, we know that Vyacheslav Shabransky ain't that good. And I called a stoppage in under four rounds. I knew that if Shabransky could not last four rounds, or could not last one round probably, he was going to be out very quickly. And but I thought Kovalev looked sensational. I thought that this is a guy that's better pound for pound than, say, a guy like Vasily Lomachenko. I thought that body work was spectacular. Like, he learned so much from Ward, and he's put it together in a package that's just way more brutal and ruthless than what we see from Kovalev. Or, sorry, not Kovalev, from like a guy like Ward, where Ward is more like picking and choosing and pinpointing what he's doing, whereas what Kovalev was doing was just dissecting Shabransky. And this version of Kovalev, I mean, it might be good that he lost and had this wake-up call that he has the talent, he just needs to put it together. And I thought it was just a spectacular performance from Kovalev. Obviously, it's not against a guy that you rate very highly, but it's a good win nonetheless.
Yeah, you pretty much nailed it with Kovalev. He's always had the goods. Everyone's known that he's good, but maybe he was starting to believe his own hype a little bit too much when he stepped in with Ward.
Yep.
And so the first time, you know, it was super close. You can call it a robbery if you. That's a bit of an exaggeration, but it was a razor thin loss. Then the second time he comes in, you know, thinking that he thinks he got robbed. So he comes in the second time and he gets stopped. It ends up even worse. It's like Roman Gonzalez happened. So he believed his own hype too much. Ward woke him up, and I mean, just like everyone was putting it, Kovalev's back. This is the crusher as we knew him.
Well, I would say that while there's a version of the crusher that's returned, this is not the crusher, I don't think. This is something different. This is a fighter that isn't just going to come in and destroy guys. I think this is a guy that's going to – he had this potential, no doubt about it, and he did not beat Hopkins by being the crusher. But what we're going to see is this is a, you usually don't see comparisons like this, but I like to think that this version of Kovalev, from what I've seen, and I'm projecting it outward of like, where does this go down the road? It's almost like Spence, where Spence is not a destroyer. He does not go in and do a Golovkin or do a Gonzalez against a guy with 34 losses. This is a guy that breaks guys down. And it's not exactly Golovkin-like, because Golovkin's got just it's a different style. But Kovalev, I mean, this is a different guy. I'm like really excited to see what Kovalev can do with this. And I think there's a problem that I think is not getting looked at or not being talked about too much. And it's with light heavyweight. If you look at light heavyweight, can you tell me the guys who are under 30 years old?
Bivol. We had this conversation. I think Bivol
and Marcus Brown. One of,
those are the only ones. Everyone else is somewhere around 35 plus or minus.
Yep. So, I mean, and if you're Stevenson, it's 40, but, yeah, so that those are your options for young up-and-comers at light heavyweight is Bivol and Marcus Brown. That's it. And we can, you know, there's obviously a lot of hype around Bivol because, you know, he's another Eastern European who knocks guys out. So clearly he's one of the best fighters in the sport. And if you don't get that, like, and if especially if you're a newer fan, in the late, around 2010, so in Manny Pacquiao's climb, if you basically had a background that kind of fit Manny Pacquiao's, you got a lot of like the aura that he had. You got some of that on you. So when you're a Nonito Donaire and you knock guys out, people think that you must be pound for pound and have just as much skill as Pacquiao because you're sort of related to him. And in the same sense, we're in that right now where Golovkin brought about a huge hype that goes along with the Eastern European fighter. And you see it with Kovalev. Now, Kovalev has legitimate talent. And I'm not trying to disparage Kovalev and Lomachenko as well. He's got talent. But you're Ushik seeing guys...
Well.
Ushik, absolutely. My favorite of the bunch. But if you get guys now like Bivol, they get this hype that they don't necessarily deserve because what they have not proven it in an actual fight. And we can go down the list of guys who we thought, this guy's the next Golovkin, and they got beat. Vasily Lapikin was a monster. He comes on HBO and gets old man. And we just forget about that. And I'm not saying this to put down, like, you know, the Russian fighters, the Ukrainian fighters. That's not what I'm doing. What I'm doing here is I'm just trying to point to something. It's like, you got to earn this. And Bivol's done nothing other than look like he's got the goods. And there's more to it than just looking good. I mean, Kareem Mayfield looked great. Obviously a different style. We thought he was the next Shane Mosley. We could say the same thing about Sean Porter. Didn't work out that way.
Wasn't Amir Imam getting that kind of hype as well?
Don't even start about Amir Imam. Adrian Granados actually can say, I thought I won that fight. And Amir Imam can say, well, you stopped it too soon. But the thing is, like, you know, it takes more to be an elite prospect than reminding you, the fan, of somebody you know that is good. It's not bad to be reminded about that. I mean, that's great. But you got to prove it. And just because you do it against bad opposition does not make you great. So, like, and we can even go back and you can use this on what I said about Kovalev. Like, well, you know, he did it against Shabronsky, right? I get that. And that's why we preface it. This Kovalev, I'm excited about because I think this version of Kovalev could be the best version of Kovalev that we've seen. But he's got
to
prove it, you know.
And
well, and that's the problem, and that brings us back to the original thing, is that Kovalev is old. And the problems that we've seen with Kovalev are not the problems that you want to have as an aging fighter. You cannot buckle to body work. Because these young dudes, they come in super confident, and what do? If they're not headhunters, they're like, I'm just going to go to the body. I don't care. Hit me up top. And the body work is something used to, like, I mean, Miguel Cotto is a brilliant example who we're going to talk about this. As he got older, wiser, more experienced, and wobbled and dropped in fights, he abandoned bodywork because he realized the risk that that posed. And Kovalev, like, that's a concern I have for Kovalev, is if he faces a guy that's willing to do bodywork, what happens? How much does he abandon his own bodywork that we saw? That's clearly he took a page out of Ward's book. And obviously that's obviously you do that. Like, that's one of the best fighters of this generation. You fight him and lose from him, you better steal what he used on you. You've seen guys steal from Floyd Mayweather. You've seen guys steal from the guys who are good and beat them. Why not? So
I can feel the fans the world over saying, should Kovalev steal low blows? I sense it in the force. That's exactly what everyone's, well, not everyone, but what a lot of people are thinking.
Okay. Go back and watch the tape, all right? If you go back and watch the tape, Kovalev was done before the supposed low blows happened. He was done already. He was on the ropes. It was when he was on the ropes and not protecting himself that the low blows came. So what was going to be the result?
Well, he was like leaned, sitting on the ropes. He was completely doubled over. Like, I mean, I'm not sure what you really expect. What do you really expect?
I mean, look, the point is, do you see Kovalev surviving that fight and pulling out a win? Think about what bodywork does to you. It takes your power away. And Ward didn't start his attack and going after Kovalev until he realized there was nothing much on those punches. Go back and watch the fight. Like, just stop viewing it from your point of view that you want Andre Ward to lose. You'll see, like, that fight, Kovalev, there was no way he was going to win that fight. Ward was already pulling away. And obviously, that's the pass. That's a Kovalev that was not as focused or whatever he claims, okay? I don't care because I like this version of Kovalev. And I really want to see what he does with the time that he's got left with also the light heavyweights who do have a very limited amount of time. I mean, I'd love him to fight Beterbiev. I mentioned this in the last podcast. I've always thought Kovalev would kill Beterbiev, and I'd love to see him fight him. So he can shut all these people up who think Beterbiev is worth something. He's not an elite light heavyweight. I'm sorry.
Nothing to be sorry about. He demonstrated that in his last outing.
I mean, let's get to somebody that could beat Beterbiev, and that's Sullivan Barrera. This guy, I love Sullivan Barrera, and I'll tell you why. Sullivan Barrera is like that kid that he don't act right until his mom goes upside his head. Every single time Barrera goes out, he just comes out like asleep. And he gets knocked down, and then he just wakes up and is like, oh yeah, I'm in a boxing match. Let me show you some skill. And then he shows the skill, and it's like, damn, this guy's good. It didn't work against Ward. But like,
Valera woke him up early, though. He closed out round one with a knockdown, with the shared knockdowns. And after that, it was Sullivan Barrera pretty much the entire time. He practically pitched a shutout.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think I gave Valera a round after the knockdown. Like, I thought he was just outclassed. Barrera destroyed him.
I gave him two, but one of them, he got a point deduction in one of the rounds that I gave him, so it ended up 9-9 anyway.
The point deductions in that fight were ridiculous. Yeah,
that was something else. I mean, I was saying on Twitter during the fight that it's cool. It was nice to see a ref give warning saying, he warned him once, stop doing it. He warned him again, you do it again, I'm going to take points. Then he started taking points after that, and it was nice to see a referee follow up on the threat. But at some point, man, like, I think that the ref took more points than Valera earned in the entire fight.
Well, he tried to make it up by taking points away from Barrera. I think he was just like, I might have taken too many points in this fight.
Yeah, Barrera got
the dude took three
one.
Points.
He got docked one in round eight, I think it was. And yeah, that was, to me, that was a Valera round. But the ones that Valera won on my card, they were super close. And it was they could have absolutely been toss-ups. Those were swing rounds for sure.
Okay, I was just thinking, okay, so let's say you had it as a shutout for Barrera, and you gave him the round that he got knocked down in. Now, you shouldn't have, but you did. But since it was both got knocked down, you can score it, you know, for either guy. With the point deductions, this dude could have walked out with, like, 85 points. Like, this is a 10-round fight. You should not be having anything below, like, 88.
Yeah.
The dude might have had 85 points. Barrera's, he's legitimately, and I was never high on Barrera. I thought the fight with Ward, I was just like, just this guy is really one-dimensional. And as for a Cuban fighter, there's no class.
Is he
really
Cuban? I thought he was Dominican.
No. Valera's Dominican.
Oh, okay. I had them mixed up.
Let's not go there. I'm not going to.
It was a mistake.
So, Barrera. Now the question is like Barrera versus Ward. What happens? Or not Ward. We know what happens there. Barrera versus Kovalev.
Let's see. I think that it would be close in the first four or five, but I think that Kovalev we saw Saturday, he's a grade above, and Sullivan, he was awesome, but I wouldn't see him getting the win.
I think I have the opposite opinion of you. I think if Barrera survives the first four rounds, you know, and I think this is something you're going to basically repeat every Kovalev fight, but if he survives the early rounds, and especially if Kovalev just drops him once, I think Barrera becomes a live dog in that fight. And Barrera's not afraid to go to the body. He's good at leading as well as countering. I think it could become a close fight. Now, I pick Kovalev to win, and I put him as a healthy favorite. But it's not a fight where I would be too shocked if Barrera pulled out some upset. Now, I'd be completely shocked if he stopped him, but, like, I don't know. I don't see it as, like, a whitewash. And we'll talk about some whitewashes later of guys who have no shot. But this is a healthy, competitive fight that I think is good for Kovalev.
We'd have to see if Kovalev's conditioning has improved with his new coach.
Oh, you know what? That
wasn't
is...
Wasn't gassing a problem with him?
Absolutely, and that's past, a really good point that we should have touched on and we forgot. But, like, this, you know... Kovalev was more active in this fight, too, don't you think?
Came out like a wrecking ball. He was just... From the opening bell, he was looking for blood the whole time. And to me, that was, like, damn, Crusher. This is Crusher. This is the guy that everyone fell in love with.
Yeah, and if the conditioning hasn't improved, I can see him gassing after six rounds easily.
If he comes out at the pace he did with Shabransky, if he does that against Barrera, I wouldn't rate his chances down the stretch. But if he would probably aim to take him out in five.
One thing I want to throw out for this before we move on about Kovalev. So a lot of people, I've read online at least, that there's a consensus that Kovalev would easily beat Badu Jack. And I think that if Badu Jack survives the early rounds, he's going to be a nightmare for Kovalev because the guy can work. The guy has unbelievable stamina. And that would be a problem if Kovalev's conditioning hasn't improved. Now, if Kovalev's conditioning has improved, I can see Kovalev easily outboxing him, possibly stopping him. But I think that's the one matchup for Kovalev that's going to be really tough for him. I mean, not like it ever happens, because it won't. But I can see that one. You know, I'd prefer Kovalev's chances against... I would say Stevenson's chances against Kovalev, because Kovalev right now is a favorite over everybody at 175.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that Kovalev would easily beat Badu Jack. I think Jack is really good, and as you said, he works really well. He has a solid pace from start to finish, and right now the unknown variable is how does Kovalev last in deeper waters right now, since we haven't seen it yet. And Badu Jack is not Shabransky.
No, by any
stretch.
Shabransky had really no business being in this fight with this opportunity, but this is what happens. This is boxing, and it's for a world title. So you know, let's move on to Gamboa versus Sosa. If you did not catch it, you didn't miss much. Euriorchus Gamboa, from my perspective, basically got outboxed and outworked every round by Jason Sosa, and then got a decision. Gamboa, that is. Yeah, you heard that correctly if you didn't watch it.
The score... Okay, so I think Gamboa got dropped twice. And so the two scorecards that had it for Gamboa had it like 96 to 92. So without the deductions, he won that fight 8-2. Gamboa won 8-2.
That's I mean, that's not what I saw for sure.
Absolutely not.
He wasn't dropped twice. He had a point deduction and then was dropped.
Okay, so he still was docked 2 points. That scoring was absolutely abysmal. That's, 118-110 to Canelo, 8-4 Bradley, 9-3 Horn.
I mean, just think about the luck of Gamboa, okay? So in the last two fights that he's won, he had a total of 5 point deductions and still won. 5 point deductions and still won. So, I mean, it was a horrible fight. As a fan of Gamboa, I can say I wished he had lost this fight, because this is one of those fights where you win and you think you still got it. And the truth is, the Gamboa that we saw is just so gone. I mean, Gamboa was never the best defensive fighter, but there was a point where Gamboa offensively was like possibly one of the best in boxing, just from a pure like talent and what he was able to do in the ring. I mean, Gamboa in his prime just walked in the ring and he was like a little Mike Tyson. Like, you just knew if he hits somebody and he's so fast that you knew he wasn't gonna hit people, like, they're gonna get knocked out. And he fought like that, and it was an arrogance, and it became just boring because, you know, it went beyond just arrogance, and like, now he was just like, oh, I'm not even gonna hit you. I'm gonna hit you when I feel like it. And, you know, that's why people don't like Gamboa. And now he's winning fights barely, after getting dropped and all of his stuff. And now it's like, he's 35 years old, trying to fight at 130 after fighting for a while in other divisions. I mean, Gamboa is just like, I don't know, this guy should be done. I don't know what it's going to take for him to be done. He's going to end up having to get knocked out and retired in the ring like most guys do. And it's like, it shouldn't have to come to this. But that's the sport.
The Gamboa that we saw on Saturday was the same guy that showed up against Castellanos a few months ago. And there wasn't much of a difference in the way that he came out. He looked stiff. He looked slow. He was spotty. When he did engage, his offense was good and it was effective, but it was just way too spotty to really give him the benefit of the doubt on swing rounds. And then Castellanos exploited his shit defense and he put him down. And I thought that was the end of Gamboa. I really did. And I think
but then you realize this is boxing.
Right. And Castellanos, though, he's scrappy and he's tough and he can bang. Whereas Jason Sosa, not so much. So while Sosa was doing the better work, I think he didn't have the power to end it.
Let's talk about that, okay? HBO kept talking about Sosa being a puncher. What?
That commentary was,
dude,
awful.
Okay, like, and I am trying so hard. I'm so conscious of the fact that people might think I'm a hater for one thing or the other, or they think that I'm pro something because I criticize it. So I'm really conscious, and I keep my opinions to HBO when it comes to the podcast. I try to keep them to myself, and I'm not going to say it unless I think it's like a popular sentiment, because I really don't want to deal with like people commenting and like, you know, it's not worth it really. Okay. But the commentary is just like, dude, are you, Jason Sosa's a big puncher, really? Cause he dropped Lomachenko when he fought him. Cause he dropped Walters because he discouraged either of those guys from coming forward. When? Because he stopped Javier Fortuna, possibly one of the lowest IQ fighters in the sport. He dropped Stephen Smith. Okay.
I think they had a narrative spun up before the fights even began. Like, they had to try to save face for Gamboa before the fight began.
I mean, he didn't even drop Gamboa legitimately. That was a slip with a punch, right? So, you know, how big of a puncher is this guy? Like, my knowledge of Jason Sosa before he showed up on HBO was that this guy can't punch, not at an elite level. And he fights Walters, who I don't consider elite, didn't drop him. Walters thoroughly outclassed him. Now, he beat Fortuna, but, like, cool, good for you. And then you drop Stephen Smith, but that's like, okay, Stephen Smith is, you know, Stephen Smith. And then he fights Lomachenko, basically outclassed, can't discourage Lomachenko from doing anything. And somehow you're a puncher. That doesn't make any sense. The commentary was... I mean, I love HBO's commentary. You know, I love Jim. I love Roy. You know, I really love Roy. And then yeah, Max is my favorite. Say,
we know you love Roy.
Look, Roy is something of a god to us. Okay? We have a shrine. There's not a day that goes by in the chat that we don't talk about Roy. And but
we didn't
like,
forget Roy. We didn't forget.
We don't forget. We will not forget. We will like the time we won't forget that you rapped your own song to the ring when John Pascal was fighting and you were training him. Like, did he get two paychecks for that? I don't know. But anyway, commentary not good. Max, like, not good. And I love Max. Max, I endure first take for him. Okay, so. Let's talk about... Oh, and we should mention Devin Alexander fought. He beat Walter Castillo. Decision. Alexander had moments where he looked good, and then moments where he's like, oh yeah, this is what Devin Alexander fights are like. He's good, but Sean Porter will beat him again. So let's move on to the news. David Haye pulls out of his fight with Tony Bellew. Now, settle down, Leo. I know you're really disappointed. You didn't think this would happen. You were like... so happy
super
that
right
David
now.
Hay would be able to redeem himself and come back and fight Tony Bell. No, come on, really. Who's surprised by this? Nobody. How many times has David Hay pulled out of a fight? Like, the guy's made of glass, first of all. Second of all, he was going to lose the fight no matter what. I don't care what you think. If you're a David Hay fan, I don't care. He was going to lose. You know why? Because his body was going to break down again. And I'm glad he pulled out of the fight and saved himself the embarrassment of losing yet again off of injury. Because at this point, it would become like, you're a joke, David Haye. Like, you're injured again. Like, just walk away from the sport. I know that there's so much potential to make money. But, you know, there's no point. Like, if you're just going to keep getting injured all the time, just save your, like, keep your health.
Yeah, time to focus on a ring star haymaker full time.
Yeah, I mean, and Haye, as a personality, can sell fights. Like, the guy can talk. And that's all you need. Like, Eddie Hearn's proved that you the promoter can be the star. And the promoter can create stars based off of how... Or the UFC is a good... You know, Dana White and... Dana White does a really great job selling fights where he's got his own cult of followers. So, let's focus on that. Tyson Fury signs with MTK Global, which is more indications that Fury's coming back. But if you've seen any picture of Fury, really, he's not going to be back anytime soon. That dude is humongous.
He's still got a long way to go. But, I mean, if he's back and he's dedicated, back in the gym and he's dedicated, then I'm eager to see what he can bring to the ring next year. I'm hopeful that he looks as good as he did. Guy's a matchup nightmare for anyone at heavyweight.
No. Don't think so.
You don't think so?
Nope. Don't think so. I think Andy Ruiz beats
long
him.
Long frame?
Andy Ruiz will take him. Trust me. You know what I'm talking about.
Dillian
Andy Ruiz
White
will take him.
Body snatch him.
Don't even bring up Dillian White. That dude. Again, people who think Wilder needs to fight Dillian White, what are you smoking? Leave us a comment. Like, why do you think that? Like, what did Dillian White prove to be considered amongst those that are...
He rocked AJ, bro. He rocked AJ.
Yeah, and that's then proceeded to... Like, have you seen Derek Chisora fight?
Yeah, he rocked AJ and then proceeded to get his face beat in for the rest of the fight.
But really...
Well,
like,
well done, Dillian.
What did he do in the Derek Chisora fight to lead anyone to believe that he's an elite heavyweight? Or even close to it. He did nothing. He almost lost to a guy that got embarrassed by a guy who had never fought a name at heavyweight in Monte Carlo. Like, come on. I'm not even going to discuss this anymore. Carl Frampton or Donaire has called out, Leonardo Donaire has called out Carl Frampton, and we're possibly going to get that fight. Now, this is a fight that would have been amazing like 5 years ago. You know, when Frampton was on the rise and Donaire was still close to his prime. At this point now, like, there's two ways to look at it. Like, Frampton's, like, kind of basically knows that he's, the end is
in
sight.
He's on the down slope.
Or this is an easy fight where he's just like, I'm just going to smoke Donaire, get some recognition for beating and put his name on my resume, and I'll move on to bigger and better things. What do you think?
I think that your second take was right. I agree with that one, that Donaire looking for a cash out, or looking, you know, to get more cash as he's on his way out the door. Frampton needs something to get his name back into the headlines. But in Frampton Reborn outing, he definitely didn't look reborn to me. And he needs something to spark up the fans talking about him again. Try to rebuild, I guess, the rubber match with Santa Cruz.
I just don't feel good about Frampton right now. I just don't feel good about him. Like, his performance wasn't that good. There are obviously high hopes that you have with Frampton, but I don't know. Just don't feel good about him right now. Let's move
on. Does Selby take him?
No. Well, actually, so no's my initial reaction, but that's more opinion and based off of feeling. But objectively, I don't think so. I don't think so. Let's see. Let's move on and talk about Joseph Parker and Anthony Joshua. They're basically, I think the latest news is like Joshua and Hearn are not willing to do a 35% split, where Joseph Parker is getting 35% of the purse. Should that be a holdup?
I was having this conversation with someone on Twitter where they were saying that 60-40 was totally fair. Joseph Parker, undefeated, and he's a champion, undefeated champion, so he deserves 60-40.
Okay, that person's smoking.
I kept trying to, like, talk him down. Like, yo, Joseph Parker in his last two outings has looked completely pedestrian. And was to come before Fury.
Maybe not. Tom was before Fury, yes.
Okay, so then it was his last two outings where he's not looking as good as he should to be claiming that he's 60-40. He doesn't pull in the numbers, like as far as ticket sales, pay-per-view sales, pretty much all the metrics that would get him a 60-40 split with one of top two hottest commodities in boxing. You gotta have some serious clout if you're going to be talking to Eddie Hearn about getting a 40% bump off of AJ.
I mean, let's just ask this, okay? Let's just look at this objectively. If you polled 100 people and you asked them, like, name a heavyweight, do even 10 name Joseph Parker? Like,
probably
what's the
not.
Percentage of people that can name both AJ and Joseph Parker? So if you just kind of come up with a split like that, you would find that at least more people, or not at the least, but more people would know Joshua. And that's the impact that he's had on the world versus Joseph Parker. Nobody knows who Joseph Parker is. So you don't deserve that split, not 35%. I would say he doesn't even deserve 30. I would say 25 is even excessive. Now, obviously, you got to make the fight. And if I'm Eddie Hearn, you know, if they're willing to take 25%, I'd say, okay, we can make this fight. Because Joshua's going to knock him out. Joseph Parker has no defense. And his offense is very limited. So I'd be willing to make the fight. But obviously, a willingness to make the fight just because you'll win doesn't necessarily always make fights happen. So we can move on from that because it's nonsense. Canelo got blessed by the Pope. This is more important.
The Pope. I would rate the Pope above Joseph Parker.
Lucas Matisse and Jorge Linares will be on a double bill January 27th, counter-programming Showtime's Spence versus, is it the Spence-Peterson fight, or is it the proposed Mikey Garcia return?
That hasn't been finalized.
But
regardless, whatever it is, the Showtime card is going to be better.
Right. So this Showtime, from the rumored matchups, does sound better. But when is, let me see, when is Spence fighting? I got 30 press releases for it in the past 3 days. So it's the week after. So I think this is the rumored Mikey Garcia return. And it's the likely opponent is Robert Easter Jr., though they are taking their sweet time putting this together. So, first of all, Matisse is fighting a Thai fighter that you've literally never heard of. So, strike one. Jorge Linares is fighting Mercito Gesta. Strike two. Tewa Kiram is his name. He's 38-0 with 28 knockouts, which means nothing because, who knows
who those... How many of those fights were in his homeland?
Yeah, well, how many of those guys were making their pro debut? Okay. But Matisse is not the same Matisse that we know and love, from his days in the early 2010s or whatever. So this might actually be a competitive fight. Matisse is definitely not the same guy. And then the Linares fight is really the one to be disappointed in, because there was a potential that could have been Mikey Garcia or really any other name at lightweight. But instead, Golden Boy is reaching into the bag and bringing out one of their own guys. And, just as somebody who's signed with Golden Boy. So, obviously it makes sense that he would fight him. 31-2 with two draws, or 31-1 with two draws, 17 knockouts. Gesta is okay. He's okay as a fighter. He's limited. But there's a big gap between him and Jorge Linares. Gesta's a guy that, if it was still around, I'd say his ceiling is being a pretty good Friday Night Fights fighter, not a world champion. He's had a world title shot before and lost, thoroughly outclassed. So this will be a second world title fight. I guess it's a good stay busy fight, and it's good to see Linares back on TV. But after his performance against Campbell, it wasn't the best performance, I thought. I thought Linares was let people down with that fight.
The Matisse fight is for a title, is it not?
Yeah, both of them are world title fights.
WBA regular?
Yeah, because Thurman's injured, so naturally we have to make another title, because we can't possibly allow... it's not like fighters fight every weekend, so, somebody needs to be a champion at in every weight class for the WBA.
Matisse, in his second fight at welterweight, is fighting for a title against someone you never heard of. Matisse himself having done absolutely nothing at welterweight.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Golden Boy dropped the ball on this one.
Which fight was it? Did I write it down? Oh, we'll discuss it later. There's another funny little situation. Well, not like this, but it's similar nonsense. But we'll talk about it a little bit later. Groves versus Eubank Jr., February 17th. I think we've talked about this enough, and we will talk about it a lot more in the future. But just, quickly, what are your feelings on the fight?
On Eubank Groves?
No, on Parker Joshua. Of course, Eubank Groves.
Eubank Groves. I think we talked about this one pretty extensively in the last mailbag, which was in October.
Yeah.
I had mentioned it then too that Groves, Eubank right now, he's on the upswing. He's reaching the top of his form, whereas Groves is on the downswing of his. So right, this is Eubank's fight to win. Groves, he'll be competitive for a little while, but I don't see him going to the end.
I think the thing that might get Groves into trouble is that he's a headhunter. Eubank. I think you're right. This is Eubank's fight to win, and it's going to rely heavily on whether or not Eubank can go to the body early. If he can go to the body early, I can see Groves really struggling late in this fight and against a guy who takes the risk that Eubank does, Eubank could score a very impressive stoppage. But, you know, Groves right now should be the favorite slightly and be favored to outbox him over 12 rounds. Much like, I mean, actually, I think kind of Groves, I think Groves and Billy Joe Saunders are pretty similar. And we can see similar types of fights, which is like, man, this 168 tournament is really underwhelming. Let's move on. Anthony Durrell, no, Andre Durrell, will be, it's rumored that he'll rematch Jose Uzcategui and on the January 27th card, which, you know, a lot of bad blood. I would have preferred if it was Durrell's uncle versus Uzcategui, but, you know, this is what we're, this is what we'll get. Interesting fight again. I thought it was, it wasn't bad first time around. So no, I have no problem with it being happening again. And another rumored fight for that card, and this could be the headliner. I'm cool with this being the headliner. Jermall Charlo versus Hugo Centeno Jr., who's coming off a massive knockout over Emmanuel Aleem.
All right. So good to see Charlo back in action.
Yeah, so Jermall Charlo, and this is rumored to be, I don't actually, is it rumored to be an LA card? I hope so. I'd love to see Jermall in person again. So that's the news from this week. I hope next week when we record, we can talk about Charlo versus Centeno as an official fight. Centeno deserves a title fight. Because this will be for an interim title, because I don't know. Golovkin, the WBC is not happy with Golovkin as their middleweight champion, so we must have an interim champion. Like, this makes no sense. And people want... No, never mind. I'm not going to go there.
I'm looking at my calendar. When is Saunders... Oh, it's on the 16th. Okay. I thought it was this weekend.
No.
All right. Yeah.
We'll talk about that next week. No, in 2 weeks. I mean, I don't know. Anyway, let's talk about Miguel Cotto. Now, he's going to fight Saddam Ali. We'll talk about this fight, okay? So, I don't think this is as big of a mismatch as people are making it out to be. Wait. Did I say
that? I'd like to hear why, because I'm thinking that...
Yeah, I said that
Saddam
right.
Saddam Ali is not so good.
Right. So, first of all, yes, let's acknowledge that Saddam Ali is a pretty chinny welterweight. But did you see Cotto's last fight?
Against Kamagai?
Yeah.
I caught the highlights. I didn't watch it. I was at the Mayweather-McGregor.
Oh, this guy bragging here. I was at Mayweather-McGregor,
the
best fight of the year. You know, that's where I was. I was, you know, enjoying myself watching, you know, Conor McGregor nearly beat Floyd Mayweather. If it wasn't for that referee saving Mayweather, he would have won. That's probably what you're about to say. But I'm just kidding, okay? If you're, like, getting pissed off, I'm just kidding. But look, Kamiga is bad. That guy's bad. Like, he just throws punches. And they just happen to land when he fights guys with no defense, like Jesus Soto Carras and Robert Guerrero. And I would never would have thought to say this, but like Miguel Cotto. Because Kamiga tagged Cotto over and over and over again. Like, that fight was brutal to watch. And Kamiga has no power at the world level, so he couldn't really do anything to Miguel Cotto. So Cotto, it was just basically a war. But Ali has some slickness. He's got some skill. And if Ali or if Cotto isn't ready for that, he's going to be in a tough fight. He's not going to land at will the way he did at Kamiga. And I think people get fooled by fights like that. So that's why I think this is going to be, it has the potential to be a pretty competitive fight and a tougher fight. I mean, Cotto's fighting. He thinks that he's fighting in his home away from home in New York. But you know what? Saddam Ali's from New York City as well. So, I mean, obviously he's not the star that Miguel Cotto is, but it's, you know, there's a lot going into this fight that has me suspicious that it's going to be what they expect, which is a goodbye party for Miguel Cotto. So anyway, let's ask some Cotto-related questions because he's retiring and all that. Like, what's your favorite moment from Miguel Cotto's career?
Oof, I might be the wrong one to ask. I was never too high on Miguel Cotto, to be honest with
you. Okay, what was your least favorite moment from Miguel Cotto's career?
My least favorite moment.
Well, you're trying to, you know, put Miguel Cotto over and you're like, you know, I don't like him. Sorry.
No, it's just I wasn't as, you know, there's a lot of people that are high on him and I wasn't one of them. Worst moment for me was just the first Margarito fight. Like, that was difficult to watch. So, like, watching him just spewing blood and spitting out globs and globs of blood at the end of it, that was rough.
This is your favorite moment from Cotto's career?
No, that was the least favorite. Mm-hmm. That, it was just hard to watch. And let's see. Kind of in the same vein, I guess. But my favorite one was the Pacquiao fight. That was a lot of fun.
Okay. Because Cotto lost?
I mean, yeah, I wasn't that big on him, and I was around that. I was just starting to get into boxing around that time, so I would like the main people that I knew obviously were Mayweather and Pacquiao, Tim Bradley, Marquez. Absolutely, Marquez was my favorite.
Okay, well, my least favorite moment from Miguel Cotto's career was the Pacquiao fight, because I wanted Cotto to win that fight. I don't know why. Everything about the 24/7 should have led me to believe that I should not want this guy to win. But I wanted Cotto to win that fight. I think maybe to just make sure that the Pacquiao fans that I knew would be pissed off after the fight. Because, you know, I didn't really care for either one. But that fight, because it looked good early on. Like, Cotto landed some clean shots early in that fight. And it looked like it was going to be a tough fight, but wasn't the case. So my favorite moment from Cotto's career is probably the rematch with Margarito. Like, I do think that Margarito loaded his gloves up in the first Cotto fight, and
it was nice. Triggered.
It was nice to see that Cotto get his revenge. But, you know, also Margarito's coming on in that fight. Just letting everyone know, Margarito is coming on. What's Cotto's best win?
Cotto's best win. Ooh, I'm not as well versed as I should be on the Cotto.
See, this is a really interesting question, because if you really look at what Miguel Cotto's best win is, you got to go back a long time. And the truth about Miguel Cotto is that he doesn't have standout wins. Zab Judah? Yeah, like, you'd have to go to Zab Judah. You'd have to go... which was a long time ago, by the way. That was 10 years ago. You'd have to go to Paulie Malignaggi, or you'd have to go to Shane Mosley. Like, if you really think about it, like, who are the elite guys? Like, Ricardo Torres. Like, because after the Margarito fight, he doesn't have any significant wins. He lost to basically everybody that had a name.
Yeah.
I mean, Sergio Martinez. Okay.
Zab Judah or Shane Mosley might be his best ones. Claudie? I say with a question mark at the end.
Yeah, because that was a split decision. Cotto nearly lost that fight. I mean, but that's the case in a lot of these fights.
Mayorga? Yikes.
That was a interesting fight. Showtime pay-per-view.
Yeah, that was a stoppage.
Yeah, Cotto. Well, Mayorga broke his hand in the last round.
Yikes.
And basically, Mayorga... always willing to go out on a shield. What is Cotto's best fight?
I would say Mayweather.
Oh, that's not what I'm... That, 'cause you're saying his best performance?
Yeah, just... I mean, that was, you know, all part of peak Mayweather time.
So winning two rounds. Winning two clear rounds and two other controversial swing rounds, like, that's what you're going to give it?
He did as good as Pacquiao did.
No, Pacquiao didn't win two swing rounds. He only won two, and that's it.
Well, then he did better than Pacquiao did.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm what I meant to ask was, what was his most entertaining fight?
Most entertaining. I thought the Canelo fight was really fun to watch. I think that Cotto did a lot better than people gave him credit for.
Oh, here we go. I didn't know we had Juan Manuel Marquez on the line. Go ahead. Cool.
I'm just saying that, like, everyone scored it like 10-2 for Alvarez, and I thought that Cotto did a lot better than that. It might not have been. It was a close but clear win. He was competitive. He's in his later years, and he was still competitive with one of the hottest guys in boxing. So I think that's a good performance.
You're gonna need a hand in your Mexican card now.
Oh, what? Because I'm giving Cotto credit for being competitive against Canelo.
You over here spitting out some fake news. Azteca and is it Azteca that Canelo has the contract with? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's TV Azteca.
Anyway, his most entertaining fight for me was the Ricardo Torres fight. If you've never seen that fight, Cotto versus Ricardo Torres, my God, that is like that sums up Miguel Cotto perfectly, that fight. And then lastly, is Miguel Cotto a Hall of Famer? I think Arturo Gotti's a Hall of Famer. Of course he is.
If Gotti is, then Cotto absolutely should be. Is he going to be first ballot? Considering the class that he's going in with this year, I don't think he'll make first ballot, but probably on the second go.
And so that's it. So let's talk about the undercard, Ray Vargas versus Oscar Negrete. I love this fight. I love it. So, like, here we go. Okay, so Ray Vargas, you know him as the WBC Super Bantamweight Champion. He fought on the undercard of the Castellanos... No, the Jezreel Corral. Was it the... No. I can't remember. He fought on HBO recently, okay? And you would think that Ray Vargas was, like, really underperformed in his fight, I thought. Still won, but he underperformed. So he should be on upset alert. You know, maybe he's not that good. And then you look, and he's like, wow, he's fighting this guy that's undefeated. But that's exactly what they want you to think. That this is one of those... situations where it's like Golden Boy picked the perfect opponent to fool people into thinking this is going to be a legitimate win. But Oscar Negrete is a bantamweight. He's coming up in weight to fight the 122-pound champion. So if you really put that in perspective, this is a decent fight and it still should be competitive, but Vargas will be at a significant advantage fighting a guy who doesn't fight at this division. And he will get the benefit of beating an undefeated, like, top contender, except this top contender comes from another division, and you shouldn't rate it too highly.
I'm not too familiar with either of these guys, but to that point of him coming from another division, like, for me personally, when I rate anybody, the only competition that I look at is the division above and the division below the individual that I'm talking about. So if a guy's really high at 122, to me, his competition comes from 118, possibly 126. So if Negrete is good at 118, I don't see it as that big of a mismatch, and it shouldn't be discounted as much as people tend to do. I mean, the weight class does make a difference, but I mean, it's like Crawford moving up to 47.
Negrete ain't Crawford.
That's too steep of an example, but when, you know, guys moving up to another class when they're good in one and they move up to the next, Linares or Garcia moving up to 140 when he finally does.
Well, I would agree if that person was established in their weight class and Negrete isn't.
Okay. So that makes more sense. Like, 'cause Crawford obviously was he's just otherworldly, and then he moves up to 47. Mikey Garcia, similar kind of situation, where he's really, really good, and moving up to 140, he's going to put any name at 140, of which there are not many, but he's going to put them all on notice. Like, I'm here too, and 135 to 140 is not a big step. So, but if Negrete is not even a force at 118. And then he's stepping up to a 122 champion, then this isn't much of a win.
He's decent, but let me put this in perspective. So, like, this would be if we saw somebody like, what's his name? Cletus Seldon at 140, moving up to 147 to fight Spence.
Lipinets moving up to fight Thurman.
Actually, I would say that Lipinitz as a world title holder and is a little established. I'm talking about somebody who, because Negrete doesn't have a world title. He's undefeated, and he's had, you know, he's done a good job for himself at this point in his career, but this point of his career is he's still a prospect, basically.
Cletus Seldon moving up to fight Spence.
Now that's and that makes sense because I think Seldon is better than Negrete, like what he brings to the ring, and obviously Spence didn't struggle in his last fight, but he's actually like a legitimate, or Vargas is, you know, he's fairly legitimate, and I think it works out. And actually, speaking of Cletus Seldon, I bring him up because HBO just scheduled him to fight in a couple of weeks against Eve Ulysses Jr. and they're talking trash about that fight in the chat, and they're stupid because that's a good fight.
That's on the Saunders undercard, right?
I believe so, yeah. So you have Seldon, who's undefeated, fighting Eve Ulysses Jr., who's also undefeated and is coming off of a win against, was it Zachary Ochoa, an undefeated fighter, one of Golden Boy's prospects. He upset them, or not upset them, but just basically, you know, prove that I'm legitimate.
You got a zero.
I don't
care.
For
saying it's a good fight.
They don't know what they're talking about.
They gave you the thumbs down.
Well, I mean, maybe they're just tired of hearing about Cletus Seldon or something. Fine. I'm tired of hearing about him, too. And then the undercard, you have Miguel Acosta versus Juan Alejo. And there's nothing like a world title fight. It's an interim title fight, but it's a world title fight where both fighters are coming off a loss. Welcome to the WBO.
I thought the WBO was the one that had the rule that if you're coming off a loss, you're not allowed to fight for their title. Because Liam Smith went and did some club show in Spain where he fought some debut guy.
Yeah, I don't know how this works.
Disaster four rounds.
Oh, you know what? Oh, my God. So I take it back. I take back what I said. I just looked. I didn't realize that Eve Ulysses had fought recently and lost to Steve Claggett? Are you kidding me? Steve Claggett couldn't beat Chris Van Heerden. Oh, this is a bad fight. This is a bad fight. I take it back. I take it back. 100%. That's a horrible fight.
All right. Well.
I didn't know that he had lost to Claggett. Like, I thought his last fight was, and I was operating under the assumption that he had upset, or not upset, but he just derailed the prospect, Zachary Ochoa. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, moving on, Anthony Yigit will fight Joe Hughes, and Anthony Yigit is a user on Reddit Boxing, so, like, support him, watch it. It's on Channel 5 in the UK, and possibly, maybe, you know, he'll take us to glory if he finds it someday.
Yigit.
And that's the fights this week, and that will be our episode. We wanted to do under an hour because Leo, I don't know, he's got things to do.
Yeah, and my construction job. If you remember the mailbag.
And speaking of the mailbag, we have another one again coming up in this week. So we'll post the link. Leave your questions. Don't scroll past page one.
If you're somewhere where you can't see lewds.
Actually, don't scroll past page two. We're on page two now where it's pretty clean. Don't scroll past page two. So thank you for listening. We will be back in a couple of days.
Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that shit.
Are we on Pornhub?
We're on Hot Lads.
Okay, add us there too.